You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
When a family moves into a house, they quickly realize that it might be haunted. Little do they know they're about to receive proof that the world of the paranormal may be stronger than the world of science. And then we take a trip into a dark forest to take a look at a couple different stories that may shed light on the answer. Is it possible that silent predators are using the multiverse to stalk human prey? Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. Hope you guys are having a great day too. I'm actually a little under the weather. I'm sure you guys could tell in my voice. You're like, Jason, you say you're okay, but sound a little stuffy. Yeah, I'm pretty sick, actually. But other than that, I'll say my day has been serviceable. I'm lying if I say it was a great day. We'll get to that in a second. We got a lot of stuff to cover. But first off, running into Dead Rabbit Radio Command, everyone get on your feet and give it up for Tension Amy 3695. Woohoo! Yeah! Wee! Tension Amy is running on in to... Oh, wait, sorry. Nope. Tension Any. Tension Any! Woohoo! Yay! Tension Any 3695 is running into Dead Rabbit Radio Command. Tension Any, you're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. The reason why is that Tension shared their Spotify Wrapped on Reddit. It's a great way to get the word out. Spotify sent these out a couple weeks ago, posted on your social media, posted online, helps get the word out about Dead Rabbit Radio. Really, really appreciate it. That's how Tension got to be our captain, our pilot this episode. Let's go ahead and get the party started here. Tension Any 3695, I'm going to toss you the keys to the Jason Jalopy. We're going to leave behind Dead Rabbit Radio Command. Drive us all the way out to my place. I wanted to address this. This episode might be a little crazy and off the rails, but we are at the end of our 90 Days to a Better You challenge. I give these every so often. It usually comes about once a year. Sometimes twice a year. And it's to set a goal 90 days in the future to be in a better place than you are right now. Declare a goal. Try to meet it within 90 days. Make progress towards it. Because those 90 days are going to pass no matter what. Whether you work towards your goal or not. It's a great little short-term thing to work towards. And I said it might... This might end up getting edited out. But I think it's kind of important to say. My 90 days... was to be more organized, I think is what I said. But really what I meant was to be cleaner. To clean stuff up. So today it's like, oh no, it's the 89th day. Ah, that's why I'm all sweaty. I was cleaning. No, I'm actually sick. But I have been kind of cleaning up. I'm not totally happy with where I'm at with my cleaning stuff. You're like, to people who know me personally, that's probably the most paranormal thing I could do. They're like, wow, Jason's place is clean. Call in the Ghostbusters. He can have done that. Anyways, I wanted to share this story with you. It just happened minutes ago before I sat down to record this. And I think it's a good analogy for life. I'm sick. I feel terrible. And I go, I gotta clean my bathroom. I gotta clean my bathroom. It's not as clean as it should be. So I get... Listen, I don't have really any clean... I found behind the toilet, I found... what are those things like that Clorox or whatever? It's like the green cardboard tube. It was like behind the toilet, which is not what your cleaning supply should be. Not in a little basket. Let me be clear. It wasn't a little basket behind the toilet. It was like by itself on its side. And I go, oh, there you are. So I grabbed that and I focused on cleaning the floor. Cleaned the toilet, but I really wanted to clean the floor. So I'm scrubbing. I got my gloves on and I'm scrubbing. Listen, man, I'm a big guy, right? I don't like getting down on the floor. It's hard for me to get back up, especially in such a small room. My bathroom's kind of small. But I do it. You know, I sit there and I'm cleaning the floor and I get it all cleaned up. It's clean. And while I wouldn't say that I felt proud, because it's something that should just be cleaned regularly, not at the end of a 90-day challenge. Well, I didn't feel particularly proud at all. I was more just annoyed that I had to clean my bathroom floor. I was like, oh, okay. Well, anyway, so I get up. I walk out here into the living room. And then I go, I gotta go to the bathroom. This is so annoying. I'm so... Here, I don't know how I felt in this moment, but I did, as it was happening, and shortly after it was done, I go, that's a pretty good analogy for life. I should share that with people. I come out into the living room. I think I, like, put some stuff away. And then I go, I gotta go to the bathroom. So I walked back into the bathroom. And I was wearing a black tank top, like a black tank top undershirt. And boxer shorts, because I was cleaning up, right? When I dress like that, I'm like that all day long if I don't have to be in public. And I walk into the bathroom, and I start peeing. Standing up, I'm peeing. And I realize, it takes me a second or two to realize this, that while I can feel the sensation of the urine leaving my body, I don't see the stream going into the toilet bowl. Because what happened was my tank top hung so low, I pissed all over the floor. All over the floor. You could not have done this on accident. It almost seemed like a setup for a comedy movie. Like, I was like, God damn it. And I stopped. I immediately stopped. It wasn't like, well, just a couple more liters to go. I'm sure I'm full of urine today. Piss. No, I stepped back and I looked at this huge puddle on this newly cleaned floor. And you know what I did? Right? You know what I did? You're like, Jason, I know what I hope you did. I hope you cleaned it up. I did. I immediately grabbed my Clorox cleaner. This is a commercial for Clorox. Do you piss the floor? Do you only clean your bathroom once every 90 days? Then Clorox is the best brand for you. 9 out of 10 slobs agree. Just a commercial, they see it sitting behind a toilet bowl. I cleaned it up immediately. And you know what? The reason why I'm telling you this story, one, I think it's hilarious. I would definitely tell it if it happened to somebody else. But I think it's hilarious. The second thing, I cleaned it up with really no emotion. Like, I wasn't mad that it happened. I wasn't laughing. I'm laughing more now about it. But I thought, listen, the reason why I think this is a good analogy for life, the reason why I'm sharing this story with you, story that makes me look like a buffoon, is because this is life, right? We take an extra effort to get something done, and then we immediately feel like we're set two steps back. Like, you actually say, I'm going to do this today, I'm going to get started, and then you start that project, and then the next day at work, all of a sudden you have more stuff to do. You've lost all your personal time for the next 3 weeks. The Johnson account has to be done. Or you get a bunch more homework put on top of you. Or your kid gets sick, and now the money you wanted to use towards this has to go towards that. That's how life works. But you keep going. You just go, okay, I'm going to put my money towards the kid because obviously I have to do that. He has a peeing problem. He's peeing all over the floor. Doctor wants to take a look at it. I have to work on the Johnson account. I have to do this homework. But don't give up, right? I mean, literally, there was no emotion. I was just like, that just happened. I got to clean it up. I got a podcast to do. I washed my hands. I also did wash my hands before I came out here. I'm all touching your face. You're like, what? This is a 3D podcast all of a sudden. That's how life works. Take one step forward, getting down, cleaning up that bathroom floor, got back up, walked around for maybe 2 minutes, and I pissed all over the floor. I pissed all over my floor. And I just looked at it and go, I remember just thinking, I gotta clean it up again. And I obviously threw my clothes in the dirty clothes, put on some more clothes, cleaned it up. Now I'm out here talking to you. That's just the way life is. And it's super frustrating, right? There are times, there have been times in my life where I would have gotten really mad and I would have cursed and been like just furious about it. I might have thrown something. I used to have real anger issues about stuff like that. I know that sometimes it can feel like you're moving one step forward and two steps back. And sometimes it's not that you just feel that way. That's what actually happened. But you have to keep going. You have to keep going. You have to keep trying. I don't know why the universe does it. I don't know if it's some sort of like slingshot effect. I don't know if the universe is testing you to see if you really want it. Because if you really want it, even after you've been pushed back two steps, you'll keep trying. I don't know what it is or if it's just a coincidence and we see it as some sort of cosmic fate. But it does happen a lot. What I'm saying is don't get discouraged. When this type of stuff happens, just go, okay, do it, and then make sure you're still focusing on your thing you want to do. Because really, what I wanted to do was come out here and do this podcast. But I couldn't do it with piss all over the floor, like fresh piss. Like, Jason, you need to clean your bathroom for 90 days. I'm sure you had pee on the floor. Yeah, but I'm talking about fresh piss. I couldn't do it. I just had no emotion to clean up. So that's just my message to you today. As you're listening to this podcast, you're peeing everywhere. You're like, oh, this is such a synchronicity. Wow, this is amazing. One step forward, two steps back. Keep going. Keep going. Even though you do get pushed two steps back, you just got to keep going. You got to break through. You got to break through. Because on the other side of that journey is the you you want to be. You with clean bathroom floors or whatever you're looking for in life. You got to keep moving towards that goal no matter what obstacles get in your way. Unless, again, your goal is to be an international terrorist. You're like, oh, Jason told me the CIA is just an obstacle. I blow them all up. You know what I mean. You know what I mean. Just keep going for it. Okay. Tension, Annie, let's go ahead and toss you the hair hang glider. We're going to jump off the highest point of my roof of my place. Glide us all the way out to the United Kingdom. We're headed all the way out to the United Kingdom. Specifically, we're headed to the southwest region of the United Kingdom. I don't know what. Someone could probably go, well, that's Brighton, good sir. That's the jolly good shire town. I don't know what this, I could have looked at a map. I was too busy peeing all over my floor. But anyways, the southwest region of the United Kingdom, the year is 1994. And we're going to take a look at this family. We're going to call the son, who's the narrator of this story, Matthew. We don't have his real name, but he goes, my dad had this job where we moved around a lot, and my mom wanted more stability for the family and for me and my little brother. So he buys this old farm. It's about a mile from the nearest village, and it's pretty dilapidated. It's pretty bad. To be fair, the dad bought it on auction, sight unseen. They're like, sold, the creepy old barn. He's like, what, creepy? They're like, oh, no, we meant creeping vines. Sure is rustic, full of rust. It's like, why are you saying that in front of the microphone? Sold to that guy. Matthew's family, they move into this rustic, dilapidated farmhouse. Bought unseen at an auction. He goes, it had been vacant for about 30 years. And it still had a lot of the furnishings from the previous owners. 30 years ago, that'd be stuff from like the 1960s. Nowadays, you like have hipsters being like, what? This is totally awesome. A heating pad with no safety mechanisms? Get electrocuted? Well, we can only wish. We can only wish. I remember once I was really poor and I said, oh, you know what I should do? I should buy a washboard. This is a true story. I was really poor. I couldn't afford to do my laundry. This was years ago. I go, what if I had a washboard? I go, it's easy enough to dry. I can put up clotheslines in my apartment and dry my clothes. And I did that. My house always smelled like downy. It's like you walk in. People would walk in. Imagine walking into a home of a bachelor. You walk in, hey guys, what's up? You want to come play some GoldenEye? What's up, man? Come on over. You walk in. I never realized how ridiculous this was. Although multiple people go, dude, you can't do this. You're supposed to dry them outside. How are you? Are you wearing clothes? Are the clothes you're wearing right now, did you dry those inside? Yeah, I dried them inside. I had lines. I had these lines going from one wall of my place to the other. And I'd hang my clothes up to dry. And it always made my house smell of, like, downy. It was the weirdest thing. I mean, it made sense, right? Because I was drying clothes. I don't know why it smelled like that. Maybe like the soap drying. But I remember thinking, oh, you know what I should do? I should get a washboard. Like one of those wicka 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 boards. Like the vibrating plastic or glass or whatever it is. The all wavy glass. I go, I'm going to buy a washboard and I'm going to wash my own clothes. And how much does it cost you to wash your clothes? It's like $1.20. It's like $1.25 to do a load. And then $1 to dry them. Are you telling me you were that poor? You couldn't afford $2.50? I was just trying to save money. So I thought, you know what, dude? I'm going to get a washboard. I'm going to get a washboard and wash my clothes in the bathtub. And then I'll just hang them up in my living room. That's normal, right? That's what Little House on the Prairie did. I went to go buy a washboard. This is a couple years ago, but I went to go buy a washboard online. It's probably like 8 years ago, something like that. They were so expensive. My grandma had one. Like, she just had it in her front yard. My grandpa's like, oh, yes, look at this old junk. Old rusty stuff. It was dope. Like, he basically had a serial killer set up out there. That's where I got the hay hook from. The famous hay hook story. They're so expensive. It was like the cheapest one was like $100. I was like, what? That's 100 loads of laundry. Wow, man, if I can't afford laundry, I definitely can't afford that. I was so mad. And I go, you know why they're so expensive? I was telling this to people. It's because of hipsters. Hipsters are buying them because it's hip and they can have it sitting in their house next to their unused butter churn and their jam maker. Speaking of that, I don't have any butter or jam. Anyone making bread? I'm so hungry. I'm so poor. I can't afford a stupid washboard that I will use to actually wash my clothes because some hipster scumbag has it to be ironic. He has it sitting next to his $1 million washing machine. Now, to be fair, I have no proof. The reason why they're so expensive is because of hipsters. I just felt that way. I immediately was like, ugh. It could be that they're really hard to make. It could be that they take a lot of work. People are trying to fold the glass, making it all wavy and keep shattering in their hands. They're like, oh, the blood squirting out of their veins. It could be that they're super hard and dangerous to make. I just remember thinking it's because of hipsters. I remember this was back when all those hipster bands like Fun were big, all that stuff. And I was like, oh my God, dude. And I'm just sitting there in a room full of dried clothes. I'm like, oh, I've only had a washboard. What I did, I know I should probably talk about this story, and I am going to, don't worry, but I'm sure you guys are thinking, well, Jason, how did you wash your clothes then if you didn't have a washboard? Well, I figured out why you needed a washboard. So I didn't actually, I go, my bathtub's dirty, so I'm not going to actually wash my clothes in my bathtub. That would just be too much. I didn't trust the cleanliness of my bathtub. I had a giant Tupperware bin, and I filled it full of water, and then filled it full of soap, and I would stick my clothes in there, and I rub them together. I think I might have gotten some rocks at some point. I think I was, because I tell people this stuff, and they probably thought I was writing a book or something. Is he writing a spinoff of Little House on the Prairie? Yeah, Jason Pioneer women used to rub rocks together. And I was like, taking notes. I come into work the next day, my clothes are all worn down from rock rubbing. You're like, what? So I think I was rubbing them, scrubbing them with something. And then I thought, wait a second, these things are soaking wet. That's why there's a spin cycle on a washing machine, I guess, to like throw the water off. They get soaking wet. Have you ever taken a t-shirt, a 3XL t-shirt, out of... You're like, no, Jason, I haven't. Nobody has. That's the point. Just put $1.25 in a machine. If you take a 3XL t-shirt that's been soaked in soap and water, Yeah, I'm like, oh, that's why it smells like Downy, because I never rinsed off the soap. What I would do is I would take these t-shirts out. They would be soaking wet. And I was like, what do I do? I just can't have these hanging up in my living room. There'll be mold everywhere. So I remember trying to squeeze the shirts out. Think about the amount of labor it's taking me again. $1.25. I'm squeezing the shirts out and still like, there's still so much water in here. And soap. So I begin hanging them up over my like shower curtain. So they would drip down. And then they would get dry enough. They were no longer soaking. And then I would take them out in my living room. No, they wouldn't be rinsed off, right? I had them in soapy water and I rubbed them together and I rubbed rocks on them. Let them sit. And then I just hung them up. So that explains why my house always smelled like detergent. Because that's what I was washing them with. And then since I didn't rinse them off, since it was just like they were soaked in detergent. There's like a rinse cycle and a spin cycle and all this stuff. I skipped all of that. And just to be clear, I saved $1.25 for that 2-hour long process. But I'd still blame hipsters for that. For not letting me get a washboard. Still probably would have messed up the rest of the process, but at least I would have had a washboard. Anyways, sorry for that. We'll try not to digress anymore. So what was talking about hipsters? Oh yeah, the house has been abandoned for 30 years. Has furnishings from 30 years ago. Matthew said when he went to the room he was going to sleep in, he got the feeling it was previously the room of a girl who walks in. It's probably like posters for the Monkees and the Beatles bands and stuff like that. Old like bands girls would be into. Probably, right? I think it was like a teenage girl. He kind of got the vibe. For that. And he's like, well, how much I could sell these to a hipster for? I bet you they'd really love this vintage Monkees poster. He walks in and he gets this idea. He gets the idea that his room used to be the room of a girl. But, you know, it could have been a room of a guy. I really like the Monkees. The Beatles are okay. Who knows? He doesn't know for sure. He does know that when he's moving his stuff in, he puts his wardrobe over by the window that looks out over the property. And he says he gets a weird feeling when he's in that area. Because he's in that a lot. He's going through his wardrobe. He's like, oh, look at these clean clothes. Cleaned in a washing machine. Like a normal human. But he'll be standing, he'll be looking over the grounds of the house. He just gets kind of a weird feeling. He doesn't really like it that much. Eventually, everyone in the house starts to experience some form of paranormal activity. Loud bangs. Coming from an unknown source. The sound of footsteps coming from rooms. People knew there was no one in at the time. Cold spots. Very, very common sign of a paranormal presence. One room was once filled up with a thick mist. And that's actually where we're starting to get to a rarer type of presence. That's not common at all. The other ones we see in just very basic hauntings. This is happening so much that Matthew's mom, who we will call Tiffany, she got really tired of it. She's trying to cook. There's mist everywhere. She's like, oh, come on, get out of the way. She started to get really tired of it. No one likes a bunch of unknown mist floating around in their house. So she ends up, even though she's not a religious person herself, she ends up contacting the village priest. So this priest shows up and he's going room to room and he's blessing the place and he just seems to be doing it kind of by the book, literally, the good book, the Bible. So anyways, he's just kind of going room to room, and it's very matter-of-factual. Hey, I'm sure he does a bunch of these. You know, you figure, oh, he probably just, this is probably his 10th blessing this day. He just seems to be very rote about it. And then when he's done, he's walking out of the house, and Tiffany is walking the priest to his car. And Tiffany said when they got out of the house, the priest's face went completely pale. And he continued walking and he got to his car and Tiffany's walking alongside of him. And he turned to her and said, quote, there's an incredibly dark presence in this house and I'm never setting foot here again. I don't know what to suggest. I'm really sorry. Good luck. And he got his car and he drove away. Which is interesting because the family never got that level of it. It was just more of an annoying thing. It was kind of creepy, but it's not like the dogs were getting possessed or anything like that. It's not like they were waking up in the middle of the night and there was a little girl at the foot of the bed going, "You're my new mommy." Nothing like that. Just mist rolling from the unthinkable voids of tomorrow. Just that. Loud banging noises. Anyways, after that, Tiffany consulted a medium. And the medium said, just embrace it. Just embrace this presence. Which I would argue was a terrible idea. But Tiffany goes, well, it's better than what the priest did. Because the priest wasn't able to do anything and then he ran away. So apparently Tiffany did start to embrace it, and things began to settle down. Everyone in the house realized that this presence seemed to get a little bit calmer. However, they still constantly felt like they were under observation. After a while of living there, we don't know exactly what time period this took place in, but could have been in the first couple months, could have been within the first year, but they decided to start doing renovations. And part of that was Dad and his work crew were going to pull out all of the old items in the house. And the easiest thing to do was to just set them on fire. Have a huge bonfire in the yard. It's a rural area, so I don't think people cared if you were burning a bunch of stuff. It was, let's just burn everything. Burn all of these possessions. We don't know what a hipster is. eBay doesn't exist yet. This is all just junk. Let's burn it. And they did. It took them a couple days. They kept pulling stuff out and throwing it on the bonfire. And then they'd pull more stuff out and put it on the bonfire. And it'd be going over and over and over again. Eventually, there was nothing left but ashes. Everything had been burned. All the possessions of the previous owners are now nothing but ashes. This part of the story, so Matthew posted this online under the name Embarrassed List 865. And he said this part of the story he was not told until he was much older. He did not know that this was happening as it was going on. But it did make him reconsider some of the experiences he personally had in that house. Matthew said this bonfire had burned and burned and burned and burned and burned till there was nothing left of the previous owners. Just this huge pile of ash. And one day him and his brother were out running around in the yard while their mother Tiffany was sitting there just watching them. And where she's sitting, she's not that far from the ash pile from the bonfire. And she's watching her kids kind of run around and she's just kind of scanning the area. And then she looks and she sees something on top of the ash. She gets up and she walks over. And on top of this giant mound of charred remains, it is an envelope. An envelope in perfect condition. An envelope that doesn't even have a singe mark on it. Tiffany reaches down and she picks up the envelope and she realizes it's heavy. There's something in it. So she opens it up and she finds inside this envelope a letter and an amethyst. It's a little gem nestled in the letter. Tiffany reads the letter and it's dated from the 1960s. Tiffany's reading the letter, and what she realizes is that the family that previously lived here, their daughter killed herself. Their daughter committed suicide. And this letter was from her ex-boyfriend offering his condolences. And he included in the letter an amethyst, because that was her favorite stone. So it was this very sweet letter from an ex-boyfriend. I'm sorry for your loss. I can't believe this happened. I included a little amethyst in memory of her. Tiffany can never understand why this letter didn't burn. I mean, obviously the letter existed. It was in a dresser. It was in a drawer. It was part of the furniture that was brought out to be burned up. But in this raging bonfire that went on for days, how did the letter not get singed? And then even then, how did it end up on the top of the pile of ashes? This is one of those stories that, if it is true, if Embarrass List and his mother are telling a true story, it only has a paranormal explanation. Or a prank. That good old previous owner's daughter killed herself prank that dads love to pull. I mean, it could be a prank, or it could be paranormal, or it could be made up. Those are really our only options there. It wasn't until much later that Matthew had heard the story about the envelope. It's not something you really want to tell your kids, right? I remember that ghost that was making all those noises. Yeah, it turns out it's the ghost of a girl who killed herself. Good night, kids. He goes, I didn't hear that story until much later, and it does really boggle the mind that this envelope could escape the blaze. But if this envelope had been burned and destroyed, it most likely would have been the last memory that this girl ever existed. It's very possible that her parents had passed away at this point. There was definitely, the house was definitely in disrepair for the past 30 years. People in town may or may not remember her. The boyfriend probably did remember her, but has moved on at a certain point. This new family would have no idea, other than the fact that Matthew's room seemed to be a girl's room, they would have no idea that this girl ever existed. And now with this envelope and this letter and this amethyst, they had proof that she did in fact exist. To end all of this, Matthew wonders to this day, you know, he posted this pretty recently online, but he wonders to this day, he goes, when I was in my room, which was most likely her room while she was still alive, there was that window that you could look out over the grounds of the house. It was a beautiful view, but I always felt uneasy there. Something felt off. I just never felt comfortable. Even though it was my room and I needed to go get clothes out of my wardrobe, it's just things. I didn't like being there. And Matthew wonders if that is the very spot where this young girl killed herself. Looking out of her bedroom window, taking one last glimpse of the world until she made the ultimate mistake. It's a crazy story because a ghost being able to protect something from a fire would require a fairly powerful spirit. That's not something that you see happen a lot. It does happen from time to time, but it's pretty rare. And then not only did this spirit have to protect the letter from burning up, because you can imagine it was like in a dresser, it was in a piece of furniture that was hauled out to this ash pile and thrown in and then set ablaze like everything else. Not only would the letter have to survive the fire, it would also have to somehow work its way to the top of the pile so it could be noticed. Otherwise, I mean, it could have miraculously survived, but it would sit underneath this pile of ash, and when rain would come and start washing the ash away, the letter becomes illegible, it becomes soaked, it begins to tear. And then maybe someone would find it odd that days, weeks, months later, in this patch where this ash was, you find a little amethyst. You think that was kind of weird, but the letter connected to it telling this young girl's story would have washed away. So not only did it have to survive a fire, it also had to find its way to the top of the ash pile so Tiffany could read it. It's a fascinating story, if it's true. That's always the question that we look at with these stories, and it's a timely question, and it's going to lead us into our next segment, Tension Any 3695. I'm going to go ahead and toss you the keys to the Carpenter Copter. We're leaving behind the United Kingdom, fly us all the way out to a small town in the United States. If it's true, that's always the interesting question when it comes to the paranormal. If it's true, a lot of these stories, especially the ones that I try to find for this podcast, are quite bizarre. And then that may even raise the threshold a little bit more. Is it true? We're flying all the way out to the United States. Now, first off, I have to say, we don't have time to cover the multidimensional predator story. We ran out of time because I spent too much time talking about my laundry. Secondly, originally that episode ended right there. It was maybe about 5 minutes of wrap up because I didn't feel good. I was like, okay, well, I told him about my laundry. What else do people want to know? But as I was editing it, as much as I like the amethyst story, I really like the story. I go, it's not strong enough to end an episode. So I'm sitting there and I'm editing it. And I was like, I got to do something else. I got to add something else, add more value to this episode. And what's funny is, while I always have a lot of other stories to do, it's about finding a theme. It's about finding something that we can talk about. As I was editing the episode, I was on the Patreon Discord. And the user Sean, Patreon supporter Sean, asked the question, has anyone ever wondered what the exact percentage would be of paranormal stories that are fake? He goes, what's the ballpark estimate? Would you say half are fake, three quarters, 99% of them are fake? It's an interesting question. And then I go, we can talk about that because I actually have some stories that could shed a little light on that topic. And that is a question we ask, is the story fake? Now, I feel like I have a pretty good process of weeding out the fake ones. Of course, I've been fooled before. Lone Pine Devils, fake. Civil War Bigfoot, fake. All of the episodes in the show, man. The notorious Pigman of Portugal, fake. Right? Oh, man, that one was a real swing and a miss. Then the story I did about the haunted high school. Apparently, there's a division. Some people in the high school say, no, that was a known hoax. While other people go, no, I saw it. It was not a hoax. I'll put that episode in there as well. Is the story fake? I think here at Dead Rabbit Radio, we have a pretty good way to kind of sort through it. But I've been fooled before. And let's start off there. This is super fascinating. Earlier this week, I covered a story. And this was one of the stories that I said multiple times while I was doing it. I hope this isn't real. Because it was horrible. If you didn't listen to the episode, it was the episode about a man who buys a laptop online, and when he gets it, he buys like a used laptop from eBay. When he gets it, it's covered in dirt, and it's stuff's missing from it, like keys are missing from it, the webcam is missing from it. And there's only one app, which was Google Chrome, and there was a file on the desktop, which was the video of a man being tickled. It was like a tickle torture fetish type video. There's a 30-second clip that he uploaded, and you can watch it. You're like, no, I'm good. I don't need to watch it. Man being tickled while he's restrained on this chair, 30-second clip. And then there's a 10-minute long video, and when the buyer of the laptop watched the 10-minute long video, it was the same thing. It was a muscle-bound man strapped down getting tickled until the last few seconds of the video, when the man stops tickling this guy and pulls out a knife and stabs the man to death. The man is restrained in this chair, and the tickling is ended, and the murder has begun. I made a bunch of jokes about snuff films and people getting murdered, and normally I don't crack jokes at victims' expense, but I was like, well, I hope this guy's not really dead, because I can't stop making jokes about it. And I presented that, and I said, the person who posted that has not posted since. The person who posted that story has not posted since. I go, what if it's a guy who makes snuff films now knows where you live? Because he bought it on eBay. The guy would have this dude's address. The guy hasn't posted since. Well, anyways, this is a reason why I love posting show notes. It is so important for paranormal researchers to cite their work. That is the only way that anyone else can do follow-up research. And most paranormal researchers, most paranormal content creators do not do that. They might say the name of a book, maybe. Usually they just start listing off things that they've heard and no one can ever check their work. And as a paranormal researcher, that's the point, is to research it and let other people research the stuff as well. That's why I love including notes. And I love doing it because this is what happened. This was so fascinating. A lot of you guys were really interested in that story. Not out of like a freaky fetish way, but because one, it involved a possible real life danger, possible mystery, right? Even if you didn't think this guy was going to get killed, where'd this video come from? And it wasn't like finding an envelope somewhere in rural Southwest United Kingdom. Like, where, we wouldn't even know where to start with that. But this one, we had a 30-second video, gave you something to go on. A lot of you guys were contacting me about figuring out what this was. Well, somebody solved the mystery, at least part of it. This is what I was really, really happy about this, because this makes it, this, I'm glad that the process works. I put in the show notes. I put in the 30-second video. You guys were checking it out. Po' Boy Peter on the Patreon Discord. And what's funny is once he figured this out, I thought, had I put in more time, I might have been able to do this as well. Not saying that I'm better than Po' Boy Peter at all, but you know what I mean? Like, had I tried a little bit harder, I might have figured this out. It probably could have saved you nightmares of getting tickled and then murdered. Po' Boy Peter said, hey, I figured out the origin of that video. There is a company called Tickle Abuse. And he goes, it's the same chair, it's the same wall. And it's funny, when he sent me over a photograph, from a screenshot from one of their, or maybe it was like a thumbnail, maybe he had me click on a link and see a thumbnail. And then I went back and watched the original video, I went, dagnabbit. It's funny, because when I saw that it was the same thing, that this murder room, this possible murder room was also featured on Tickle Abuse's YouTube channel, there was a brief moment when I thought, oh man, like, so the mystery's not real, man, didn't really get murdered, oh man. There's a company called Tickle Abuse. They use the same burgundy chair placed in a room. The backdrop has a wooden shelf and then a brick wall. And that is the same details we saw in the 30-second video in that laptop story. And what's super interesting, I'll put it in the show notes. You guys can go to the Tickle Abuse YouTube page. I'll have that in the show notes. And if you see the 30-second clip, it's the same place. It really is. My question now is, and I'm curious, did the person who posted that story fake it? Or did they misinterpret it? That's the big question, and that's really how I responded to Sean. To me, there's a difference between faking something, which is doing it with the intent of misleading people. Wearing a Bigfoot costume, flying a drone around shaped like a UFO, writing on your frosty mirror, get out, and then bringing other people in the room to see it. That's fakery. There's fakery, and then there's misinterpreting the events. Really what I said to Sean, and I go, I would say fakes. I would say people actually setting out to mislead people using the paranormal, my estimates would be somewhere between 10 to 20%, where people are on purpose trying to commit some sort of fraud or gain attention. Like the Lone Pine Devils, that was fake, but it was a promo for a movie they were shooting, and it was like they were building up the universe. It'd be the same thing as if you got tricked by the people who were trying to build up hype for Cloverfield, and they had that whole Slurpee campaign or whatever. The Civil War Bigfoot, that was a guy writing an April Fool's Day article for his friend's Civil War website. Everyone who was reading the website back when it was published knew that it was a joke. While those are fakes, they're not necessarily fakes in a mean way. They weren't out to actually scam people, but they were still fakes. They're still fakes. I think you do have people who misinterpret an event. They feel a cold spot. They feel like they're being observed. They don't feel comfortable being in a room alone because it's just a weird feeling. And there may be no paranormal presence at all. All of that stuff may be explainable. But if someone posted that story online or told you that, I don't think they're faking it. They're just misreading the signs. They're putting together this big coincidence. With this laptop story, I'm not for sure. It's possible that he did buy a dirty laptop. It's possible that it had nothing but Chrome on it and these two videos. It's possible that the stab, because apparently Tickle Abuse does do custom videos. So it may have been a fake snuff video. for their particular audience. And then this guy who buys this laptop gets all that, and he just sees it and doesn't know that it's fake. I don't know if he was trying to fake it out, fake people out, build an ARG. I don't know if he saw something and misinterpreted it as real. And I'll also put this out here. We'll throw on our conspiracy caps. Tickleabuse does apparently do custom videos. Maybe someone gave him enough money to murder a guy. I don't know. I will say, once I found out, and again, thank you, Po' Boy Peter. And a lot of people were looking in on this, so I really appreciate it. That shows that the show notes are doing their job. I looked through a lot of thumbnails of tickle abuse, tickle torture videos. I never saw that same guy. I was even typing in, of course, I pretty much ruined the algorithm for me. Google's going to be sending me all sorts of weird stuff. Tickle abuse, muscular, bald head, tattoo. I couldn't find that same guy. So it is very possible that that is a private video or a commissioned video. I don't know if a company like Tickle Abuse would murder someone, but if the price is right, I'm sure Corridor Crew would throw a real man off of a cliff, say it was a stuntman. Interesting, though, and that's a good, I wanted to follow up with that. I'll add a little thing to the end of that episode in a couple days just to kind of say the same thing, but very, very interesting, right? A fake or real or misinterpretation of real events. We don't know. Also, because I went to revisit the story, I said in the original episode, that guy has not posted since he talked about this laptop. Is it possible that he's now being tickled in a snuff video? He posted just a couple days ago, like right after the episode came out, he posted asking people, hey, how do you switch weapons in Arma, which is a military first-person shooter simulation game? So he's fine. He's fine. He's not currently being tortured. Fascinating story. Is it real? Is it fake? But that's not the end of this, because I also wanted to talk about this story. This one's a little more controversial, but I think let me back up. It's way more controversial, but I think we have the same question. A lot of people did not like the fact that this was posted, and I think I leave it up to you. Is it fake? Is it a misinterpretation of real life, plausible, scientifically explained events, or is this a real phenomenon? Interesting. And Sean, thanks for posting that. It was really cool. We're headed out to this house. It's June 24th, 2022. We're about to meet this young woman. Let's call her Becky. We don't have her real name. She's a wife and a mother. She's putting her children to sleep that night. Go to sleep, little baby. Go to sleep, little baby. Go to sleep, little babies. Mama loves you. Yes, she does. And she always will. I can't sing anyways, but I definitely can't hit a high note with this raspy voice. I'm recording this segment like 6 hours after I recorded the rest of the episode. I just needed to give you guys some more. Anyways, she's done singing a creepy, sleepy song to her babies. But right when she's done singing, she doesn't specify that she's singing. But anyways, when she's done putting her children to sleep, she hears the front door slam shut. Bam! She's like, what? That's weird. That's kind of out of character for my husband coming home. Doesn't normally slam doors. And then she hears the back bedroom door slam shut. Bam! She goes, I don't know who else it would be. It has to be my husband coming home. So she calls. This is an interesting story for multiple reasons. I'm glad that we're doing this. I'm glad that I didn't let the episode just end. She calls her husband on his phone. And her husband's at work. So now she's really, really concerned because she definitely heard someone enter the house and enter the back bedroom. So she calls the police. The police show up. They check the house out. There's nobody there but Becky and her children. There's no sign of a break-in. She said they also had security cameras, you know, probably like Ring doorbell or surveillance cameras or whatever. There's no sign of anything on the cameras as well. After that night, Becky's son begins to have these horrendous nightmares. And not just nightmares, they're demonic. He's having these infernal visions when he sleeps. It's beyond the pale. You're not just dreaming that Ronald McDonald is hiding under your bed. Although some can classify that as demonic. You're like, wow, Chase, thanks for putting that thought in my head. It gets so bad, these dreams won't stop, and they're so terrifying that Becky eventually calls in a priest to bless the house, and the priest comes over, blesses it, and the nightmares stop. June 24th, 2022 is the day that all of this started. That's the day that she heard something enter the house, slam the door shut. Shortly after that, her son began to have these nightmares. June 24th, 2022, to you judicial nerds out there. Guys, strap in, man. Strap in for this one. June 24th, 2022 is also the day. It's not just the day that an evil presence entered Becky's home. June 24th, 2022 is the day that Roe versus Wade was overturned by the Supreme Court. Roe versus Wade, which made abortion legal in every state, since it was ended, then threw the decision back to the states. All 50 states could then set up their own rules regarding abortion. Becky tells us that when she was inside her mom, when she was just a little baby floating around in her mom's tummy, her mom was encouraged to get an abortion. But Becky's mom was like, "Nah, I'm good. And gave birth to baby Becky. So Becky is pro-life. Becky goes, "There was a chance where I could have been aborted. And now I am pro-life." Becky believes that because she was almost aborted, and because she's pro-life, that there was a demon out there who was so mad that Roe versus Wade got overturned, that it stormed into her house and began to torment her children. She believes that this demonic entity was taking it out on her because of the Supreme Court's decision. This is an interesting story for a couple different reasons. First off, people hated this story. She posted this online underneath the name Outside Jackfruit 56. She posted it and people tore her up. They thought this was the dumbest story and how foolish it was for her to even believe this. What's interesting is it fake? Is it a misunderstanding of real events, or did this really happen? This is actually, I didn't plan any of this. This is weird. This is actually a perfect story to look at with this. Because here's the thing, there are little interesting clues in the story that make me think she might have made it up. The main one, and again, listen, I'm 47 years old, I live alone. I grew up in a totally different generation. Maybe kids do this stuff these days. I'm imagining she's probably in her late 20s, early 30s tops. This might be normal. She's in the bedroom putting the kids to sleep. She hears the loud front door open and slam shut. She hears the back bedroom door slam shut. She then called her husband because she thought the husband was in the house. She called her husband, assuming he was going to answer the phone from the back bedroom. So I'm assuming she has her cell phone. He has his cell phone. Do people do that in a house nowadays? I'm genuinely asking. Do people, if you have two adults at opposite ends of the house, you don't yell anymore? Is that an old person thing where you'd be like, "Hey, are you, what's for dinner?" Do people not do that anymore? "Hey, come here, there's something funny on television." You call from the house? I mean, I don't think it's a Spaceballs-sized house where it's, you know, like a mile walk from one end to the other. That part, when I read it, I go, that's weird. That was a weird detail. It was the perfect setup to find out she was alone in the house. And then she could call the police. Like, from a narrative point, I go, oh, that makes sense. Like, if I was doing a scary story, That makes sense. In my experience, I would have had to leave the room and walk around. I would never think to pull out my cell phone and call someone else in the house. Unless I really was concerned someone had broke in, but at that point she wasn't. She thought it was her husband in the other room. I remember, that part sounded made up. But maybe people do that these days. People were actually saying she made it up or she was stupid because she used the term, I called in a Latin priest. People go, that's not a thing. I mean, unless you're in Italy and have a time machine, they're not called Latin priests. A lot of people were raking her over the coals with that. It's one of those things we've all seen on the internet. You make a small grammatical error or spelling error. Instead of attacking the argument, you just attack that. One of the other details that made me think, is that she called in the priest and she said he blessed the house. And I didn't specify this in my narrative because I knew I was going to do it here. She said that he blessed the house and he performed an exorcism. Those tend not to be, those tend to be something you got to prepare for. It's not like you're just driving down the road, gets a call on his cell phone, shows up, performs an exorcism on the house. That would be something that could take weeks to get planned out. I don't know where the story took place, but they have like a team of floating, not literally, which have to be clear in stories like this, floating exorcists that kind of move from diocese to diocese. I saw that and I go, I think people know that, you know, exorcisms are a thing. So maybe she just added that detail in. And now here's the thing. I 100% didn't think the story was fake. I go, there's some weird details to it, sure. I was more along the lines of, this might have been something else. Because all she had were the door slamming that particular day and then the nightmares. Those two things could be explained in scientific terms, especially door slamming. That's not paranormal if it only happens once. She's the one who connected it to the day that Roe versus Wade was overturned. It could just be misinterpreting real life stuff that can be explained away, childhood nightmares and door slamming shut, and then going, oh, I was almost aborted and this was the day that Roe versus Wade was overturned. It must be demonic. Totally explainable, but she went the paranormal route. I think that happens in most paranormal encounters. I think most people see something and they misinterpret the data. It could be true. It could be that a demon did enter her house on that night and begin terrorizing her family. I would still kind of say I would think the two things were unrelated. I think she might be let's assume that a demon did enter the house. Does that mean that it was doing it because it was mad because Roe versus Wade was overturned? Because again, it didn't make abortion illegal across the country. It became a state's thing. And you would imagine the demon would just be like, okay, I'm headed to California. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, oh man, I'm the abortion demon. I don't know if he would fly into this woman's house out of all 350 million Americans. She's definitely not the only one who almost got aborted. But it would, to be fair, to kind of make you feel special, right? You're like, oh man, it's totally awesome. That guy just has a suicide girl ghost in his house. I got the abortion demon. Wow, I'm cock of the walk. Look at me, I'm so fancy. Walking down the street wearing a shirt. My house was possessed by an abortion demon. Like, I was a traumatized child with demonic dreams. And you're like, what? It's a weird story. It's a weird story, and it actually made people so mad that it made me want to cover it even more because I was like, they were just grilling her, and I think they were grilling her less on the idea that a demon entered her house and more on how the politics were. Which isn't a way to approach the paranormal. It's funny, months ago, during the summer, I kept meaning to address this, Ethan Browning on Facebook, longtime supporter of the show, asked me, do my politics and my view of the paranormal ever collide? And I never got around to answering him because I said I'd answer it on the show. He sent that email out in July. I'll say this. I don't normally talk politics on the show, but no, my view of the paranormal does not affect my politics. My views of conspiracy definitely affect my politics. 100%. And I've said that before on the show. I'm a big local government guy. I think local government, you can actually matter. I go, you know, like state politics, you got a voice. National politics, the voice is much quieter. I do always recommend people voting. But, yeah, I think because I'm a conspiracy theorist, I'm far less trusting of people in the halls of power than probably the average person. The average person doesn't trust them at all, right? So, but my views of the paranormal don't really get involved in my politics. I almost see them as completely different. But I don't force other people to think that way. I just thought it was weird that people, and listen, I get it. Like, their abortion is a hot button issue. There's a weird story, and I was going to cover it anyways, but I think it's perfect for this because you can totally lay this out, and I'd like to hear you. Politics aside, because that's the hard part with an issue like this. I don't know, throw your politics in, it doesn't matter, but just looking at the story itself, and you can check the show notes and read it for yourself and read the comments. Is she making the story up? Is she making the story up for attention? Is she making the story up to prove a political point? And really her political point, and I think this is what got people riled up the most, her political point is abortion is demonic. That's really what she's saying in this post. Abortion is so demonic that when Roe versus Wade was overturned, an abortion demon invaded her house. So, I guess you probably can't address this without putting your politics in it, but did she make this up? Is this 100% fake? It's interesting because the story's old, right? This story was just posted the other day. And, or within the month, and it supposedly happened in June of last year. Did she make the story up for attention or to prove a point or to sway someone from one issue to the other? Are the events possibly true? Was she in her house? Did she hear doors slam shut? Does her son begin to have horrible nightmares? But that is all explainable. There's no paranormal answer to that. Those are things that can actually happen, and she attributed a paranormal source to it because of her viewpoint and because of the day it started. Or was this actually a paranormal event? And even then, there's a subset from there. I think if the story is true, if she's not making it up, and if she didn't misinterpret the event, an entity may have come into that house and began to torment that family. But it had nothing to do with abortion. Or it did. But I think those are your four scenarios. You're like, Jason, there's a lot more scenarios than that. Well, I'd love to hear them, because I'm sure that there are. Originally, I was just going to tell a story, because I thought it was crazy, and I wanted to talk about how people were reacting to it. But what a perfect segment to do it in, because I think this one you can really chop up. On the one hand, I lean towards the fake, because some of the details don't add up. But again, that could be my knowledge as a 47-year-old man who lives alone. Maybe people do call each other from rooms all the time. I don't really have anything else to go off that it's fake other than a few little details like that. The house getting exorcised. Maybe the priest did exorcise the house 3 weeks later. I don't know. Maybe it's real. Maybe it's fake. Maybe it's a misinterpretation of events. Maybe it's real, but it wasn't an abortion demon. It was just a demon. On that day, maybe it was a demon who was pissed off. Maybe it was a demon who was pissed off because Roe versus Wade. See, the thing about that, because he would just go somewhere else. That's kind of the part. That's the part in my head that would make me think, well, then wouldn't he just go to a place where there's lots of abortions rather than be like, oh, I'm going to torment this one family. But to be fair, though, that is kind of what demons do. They love to torment individuals and families. I don't know. It's an interesting story. I should have done this one before Christmas so you could have brought it up at the table with your family. You're like, so you guys said no politics, and I will respect that, but what's your view on the abortion demon? They're like, what? You're like, it's not political. It's not political. Let me tell you a story about the abortion demon. They're like, get out. You're like, we invited you back. but you're excluded from all future gatherings, and that was your plan all along, so you would never get invited back. As you're leaving, you give a thumbs up, the abortion demon's flying away. You're like, thanks, abortion demon. Family's like, leave. Why are you talking to nothing? Leave. They're poking you with the broomstick, pushing you off their property. Well, that's the end of that episode. That's the end of that episode. I'm once again sweating. I'm so sick. I wanted to give you guys more content. That first story I really liked, but you guys deserve more than just a story about me doing laundry in my house and then a letter. Although I do like both those stories. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be your email address. You can hear it in my voice, can't you? Yeah, I'm done for the night. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be your email address. You can also hit us up at Facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. TikTok is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal, conspiracy, and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day, but I'm glad you listened to it today. Have a great one, guys. I feel like I'm being... my voice was getting possessed. Nope. Just a coffee voice full of coughs. Have a good night, guys.